Hello, beautiful women, and welcome to the Claimed Podcast. I'm Anna Rova, your host, and let me tell you a little bit about myself if you're new to the podcast. I'm a femininity and feminine embodiment coach, and I run a very powerful program for single successful women who want to attract and keep committed masculine men, or women who are already in relationships but want to change that feminine-masculine polarity in their relationship. Hello, beautiful women. Before you listen to this episode, I quickly wanted to jump in and let you know that the quality of this episode and actually the conversation that we had with Jenna Ward was a little bit choppy and there were a lot of glitches. And so, oh my God, big thanks to my editor and to the whole team for putting it together because it was really hard. I think we talked for like an hour and a half, maybe an hour, and we only managed to save half an hour of the call because it was just a mess. But I decided that we need to release this conversation because there's so many important moments that we talk about embodiment and disembodiment. And talking to Jenna is always such a privilege and a pleasure. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And again, apologies for the quality and perhaps for the moments in the conversation where you might feel like something has been missed. Well, know that it has been missed, unfortunately. But I think we got some really, really good pieces there. So enjoy. All right, everyone, welcome to Claimed Podcast, whatever you're listening or watching this. Today, I have an amazing guest with me. You know, I think you and I, Jenna, should be talking on the podcast pretty much every week.
Thank you so much for having me again, Anna.
For everybody who doesn't know who Jenna Ward is, which by now, if you're a fan of my work, you should know, but everybody who's new, Jenna Ward is a non-Indigenous Australian woman and feminine embodiment coach. She lives with her baby and partner between Australia, Sunshine Coast, and Amsterdam. I believe you are now in, is it Rotterdam or Amsterdam?
The Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, yeah.
I'm in the Netherlands, yeah. And we're having a random snowstorm here at the moment.
Yeah. And your background is all pink. I'm like, Jenna, you're super pink today. Yeah. Continuing, Jenna has a passion for coaching and has worked with women from over 22 countries across 5 different continents, partnering with them to discover the endless depth, beauty, and wisdom of their own body's knowing. She's the founder of the School of Embodied Arts, an international training organization and community devoted to cultivating the skills of feminine embodiment in life and leadership. And they offer training for women coaches and entrepreneurs in the art of feminine embodiment, including movement practices, embodied living for women, coaching certification, and feminine leadership masterminds for entrepreneurs. I've gone through every single one of Jenna's programs and has basically bought everything that she's offered and put out there. And so, huge fan.
Well, I think it will be important for us to really just redefine what embodiment is and then to speak about it is an experience that so many women across so many arenas, relationship, mothering, dating, business, encounter. This spectrum of embodiment to disembodiment. We encounter it in every facet of our life. And what I'm really passionate about is, and one of my current interests in the embodiment realm is really tracing back, how did we get to this point? How did we get to this point where collectively we are so disembodied that a lot of us don't even realize it? Much to our detriment, because it impacts everything that we do, from the men that we might attract or the partners that we're in relationship. It permeates every single collective, you know, big issue, things like global warming and climate change, through to systematic systems of oppression that exist in the world. It influences everything from the micro to the macro level of our lives. And yet this concept of embodiment is new or novel or like something that people might feel curious about but not really understand why. I know that was certainly my relationship to it when I first began learning about embodiment. So what we're going to be speaking today about is what it is, why it's so important and relevant for women, and how we got so lost. So Embodiment is something that is totally natural and is also, I would like to define it, it's got really two different definitions. The first of, it's the skill of being a human, and I'm going to expand on that in a moment. But the second is that it is the skill of inhabiting your body with sensitivity. So for a lot of women, we receive these narratives that it's not okay for us to be sensitive or emotional. You know, women historically have been labeled as hysterical or unreasonable when they have been in the full feeling capacity of their emotions. In the corporate sector, we're encouraged to put things that are inconvenient, like our cycles or our exhaustion or all of the different roles that we might actually that we might actually wear as women, we're encouraged to put them aside because all of those kind of feminine feeling mushy things are seen as unprofessional. And instead we're encouraged to act like robots so that we can be productive and get a lot of shit done. And so in our time, embodiment, which is about honoring, feeling, sensing, and inhabiting all of the different currents of cycles and emotions, sensations, feelings, and intuitions of the body, we live in a time where all of those ways of operating are seen as unreliable, unprofessional, and thus undesirable. And so for a lot of women, we shut off this sensitive, intuitive, sensual part of ourselves so that we can meet some ideal about what society wants us to be, which is often good little worker bees. And in doing so, we really deny ourselves the richness of who we are. And I experienced this I used to be a clinical hospital pharmacist, working my way up the management ladder. Until at a relatively young age, I was still in my 20s, I kind of reached the top of the ladder. I was very intelligent. I was very able to shut out my body's needs to just get on with the job and be the most efficient and the most productive in the room. And yet inside, I felt all dried up. Like, what's the point of this? Where am I going with this? I'm already at the top of the ladder. I've reached all the milestones that the conventional path says to me, tick, 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 done. Like, there has to be something more to life. There has to be something more than this narrow paradigm we're sold. And that was really when I started to ask that question, there has to be something more. I yearn for something deeper. I want to feel and be ravished by life more fully. That's when I really realized, oh, I am super disembodied. And I mean, I didn't have language for it at that point, but I realized I was craving a different way of operating. I was craving a different skill set that my culture hadn't taught me.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we find today with so many women. And in fact, you know, obviously it's so interesting, Jen, and I'd love to ask you a question before we go into the why, the reasons of why we're all feeling this way and magnetism by the end of the program. But I have a particular client right now, which I saw her post in our group today. She said, the more I go through this program and the more I do my embodiment practice, the less motivated I feel to go to work. This big question for women that's popping up, the more they do this practice and the more they actually get in touch with who they are deep down inside.
As we become more sensitive to our body and to listening to her desires, her longings, her cycles, the things that exhaust her, the things that don't feel in alignment with her, as we come into with greater sensitivity, our body, and we notice what we feel more, the truth of anything is in the feel of it. And so if we become more skilled at inhabiting ourselves and becoming ourselves, occupying ourselves, that's embodiment. If we become more skilled in this, and then we put ourselves into situations that are dishonoring of who we are, we're going to notice that that doesn't feel good, that it doesn't feel desirable, that it feels out of alignment. And I can appreciate why that's a really challenging truth to tell yourself, because when you have built your life career, identity, relationships based on this idea of what it should be. And then you realize that from within that begins to crumble. It can feel like a real, some of the spiritual language around it is the dark night of the soul. It's like, well, if I'm not all these things that I've identified myself as being successful and thus proving my worth in the world, if I'm not all of that, then who am I? And I can very much relate. I was terrified of leaving my pharmacy career to do something that felt more enlivening to me, to the point whereby it took me 3 years of just scaling back my hours a little bit by little bit before I actually said, okay, I'm going to quit this career. And I think that's useful to know that it doesn't have to be all or the other. Our modern mindset is very binary. I either have to do this or I have to quit and do that. And actually, there can be seasons and cycles of transitions. There can be explorations that are based in curiosity, where you don't have to make a hard and fast decision right now. You're allowed to take your time. And so I feel that it is an irrevocable side effect of embodiment that we do begin to create these ripples whereby everything in our life will need to come into greater alignment. And that can feel terrifying, but it's actually just like a spring clean. And it's better that you do it now at this age than in another 20 or 30 years' time when you've wasted so much of your life force energy striving towards goals that you didn't care about. So circling back to your question then, how or why were Indigenous cultures so embodied? Well, I think one of the key things is imagine this kind of world. Imagine a world whereby you didn't go to the supermarket to get your food. You sourced it from the earth. Imagine you didn't have to show up to work for yourself or for another person. Your work was taking care of the community, being in community with people, making sure you had all of the basic requirements like water and housing. And then imagine that you didn't necessarily have to make sure that you had a big bank account to buy a bigger house or a fancier iPhone. Instead, think about all of the time and energy that we put towards earning money. And instead, you would have that time, that space, and that energy to cultivate perhaps different types of practices or rituals that were about enjoyment of life and perhaps even along the line of spiritual pursuits. I think if we were very generally, just to rewind the clocks, I'm not speaking about any particular Indigenous culture. I'm just speaking about cultures that existed before all of our modern industrialization, before the age of reason, before the age of technology. This is the kind of environment where we were living with the seasons and we were living of and the earth raised us. In these types of cultures, in these types of times, it is instinctual and natural to listen to your body as a source of great reason, as a source of great knowing, because this is how people came to know the earth. And on top of this, there are many incredibly sophisticated systems of spirituality and health. If we think about things like Chinese medicine from Asia or Tantra from Southeast Asia, so many different and amazingly phenomenally sophisticated systems of spirituality and knowing that were developed by these people from their place of inner connection. And, you know, this gets pretty esoteric, but it's even worthwhile considering or suggesting that everything that we are searching for, that one of the views of embodiment could be that within us is an entire galaxy, an encyclopedia of knowing. We can almost think of this body as one of the temples that houses the divine. And inside this temple is an entire universe of possibilities. And so many of these ancient cultures, in my perspective, and I'm very happy to open to a discussion around this, but my perspective is one of the ways that some of these cultures were able to develop such sophisticated medicinal and spiritual practices of caring and nourishing the body is because they were so connected with their body. They were able to source this wisdom, not from Google, but from inside the encyclopedia that they are. And that is like the key distinction. If we kind of rewind the clocks now, centuries and centuries forward, when we need an answer to something, we often don't pause to check in with ourselves. We outsource the answer to Google or a friend or a colleague because we don't have this sense of self-sovereignty or the sophistication of our body sensitivity. We've lost the skill of embodiment as our earth has become increasingly complex and capitalized and full of technology. And in doing so, we've lost our magic.
Hi, girlfriends. Sorry to interrupt. You're listening to the episode, but I quickly wanted to jump in and let you know that I have prepared something exciting for you. If you're interested in polarity, femininity, and how to embrace your feminine and how to attract primarily masculine men in your life, this announcement is going to be very useful for you because I'm talking about my signature training. I'm like, how do I describe this experience? Because it's really an experience, you know. This is a signature training, my 1-hour webinar that I've put together. And it honestly, it's been through a few iterations in the last 2 years, but I feel like this is the best yet training of mine that didn't come from, you know, reading 2 books and 3 courses and like coming together in a copy paste thing that I now advise women to do. No, this has come from me, my own lived experience through my dating life and through finding and attracting the masculine man of my dreams and then marrying him and creating a family. This also came, yes, indeed, from a lot of research and learning and courses and coaches and oh my God, you name it. You know, it's been a journey of 5 years for me about that time. And also this has come from my clients. So the previous training, how is this different if you've signed up for another training of mine, which was the Live Female Success, by the way. This is different because this is now coming through a distillation of my work one-on-one with women who I've helped get to that place where they're just attracting better men and they start attracting better masculine men and are on their way to actually to a relationship eventually. Not only masculine, but also masculine committed men. So if you are in a situation where you're attracting men that are less than desirable, let's say they're feminine men who don't want to lead, don't want to take charge, and men who are unavailable, then this training is for you. I will have to call this training How to Start Attracting Your Masculine Committed Men, basically in 30 days or less. And in this training, I will share with you some of the key things that I've learned throughout this journey that are helping. That's what my work with women is based on. So in this 60-minute training, you'll find the number one reason why you're still single and can't attract a committed masculine man. It's not what you think. How to break through the patterns of attracting unavailable or feminine men, as I said, and find your blind spot so you can attract the men you want. How to master the feminine masculine polarity so you start feeling taken care of, claimed, and finally be able to let go of control and uncover the lie of female success that's keeping you stuck, exhausted, and unfulfilled, which means in masculine energy all the time, so you can start living in freedom and joy and much, much more. So if you're interested, go to girlskill.com/webinar, sign up, and I can't wait for you to see this training and to let me know how it went. And by the way, there are no replays for this, so make sure you select the time that you can show up and be fully present. All right, I'm going to jump off and you continue listening to this episode.
A few other thoughts as you were talking about, and I love how you're saying, you know, how do we get here? Yes, it is the parents, perhaps, and the immediate culture and everything and trauma. But if we look back, you say, you know, capitalism is one of the ways. And some of the notes that I've put here, I don't know if, I mean, obviously, you probably know this already, but here's what I'm thinking that, you know, when we go back to like the knowledge, I have no idea what I'm talking about. Probably listeners who listen are like historians and have read about all of this much more in depth than I did. But my thought is that, you know, probably disembodiment also started with the time when the man, with very, very good intentions, tried to understand the mind. And then, you know, this phrase, I think, therefore I am. And so everything just went into your head. And then knowledge and science and progress has become the ultimate. I was listening to a lecture about this. I can't remember what it was. I think it was Alan Watts, actually. I'm sure you're familiar with him, where he's talking about like even evolution, you know, how we describe evolution. It's all a theory. It's all a psychological theory that people, and you know, this goes on for centuries in industrial revolution, capitalism, everything is about how we think and the thought process around it.
I hear you in that. And so two things. You were earlier on, you quoted, "I think, therefore I am." I was speaking a little bit earlier around the 15th century when the idea of mind over body was invented. And you literally have shared one of the key quotes from that phase. I might not pronounce this correctly, but it was a French philosopher, Descartes, who coined that term. And he was one of the thinkers at the time of capitalism being developed that was influential in mechanizing the body, in turning our bodies into machines to work. So you're totally along the right train of thought. And you know, Anna, I don't have a PhD in this stuff either. Like, this is not my area of speciality. My day job is coaching women with all of the ravishments of life. But I think these are the types of conversation that are actually really useful for just everyday women like you and I and everyone who's joining us for this conversation to have, because this is our history. And one of the reasons that we are so disconnected from it is because this idea of intelligence or mind over body says that, well, if you don't have a PhD in this, then you have no right to talk about it. And what does that do? That keeps us silent because we're afraid of saying the wrong thing. You know, not you, understandably, Anna, because you're happy to have a conversation and just show up for the show. I really respect that about you, actually. But we live in this time where intellect is so highly valued and we don't want to say the wrong thing, that we avoid these types of conversations if we don't have a PhD in them. And that continues to perpetuate the silence around this epidemic of disembodiment that we have, which continues to make us implicit in our own demise. And so that's why I think it's really exciting to have these kinds of conversations, not because we have all the answers, but because we're asking questions that make us think about how we have been socialized and how we relate to our body. And that brings me to your kind of comment around your pregnancy at the moment. One of the reasons that men invented forceps is that there was a time whereby birthing was women's work, and all of the midwives, all of the women who cared for pregnancy, I'm speaking about a more European history right now because I am a white woman and currently I'm living in Europe. Anna, I know you're from an area of Europe as well. But there was a time whereby women were the sole caregivers around pregnancy, conception, anything relating to female reproduction. And at a certain point in the development of capitalism, one of the key researchers that I'm referring to in terms of speaking about this work is Silvia Federici, Caliban and the Witch, for those who are interested in some really heavy reading around this. But around the time that capitalism was invented and people were beginning to mechanize the body, make the body into work machines, they realized we need more bodies to do more work. Women are encouraged to breed and breed and breed, and they don't have autonomy over their own reproductive power, so that we have a bigger working class, so that we have more people to labor in our fields. So it doesn't surprise me that a man invented forceps, because women have been denied this knowledge of our cycles. You know, even today we see menstruation and cycle education is something that not a lot of women get. I got a very light education. And the sense of cultural taboo and shame that we have even today in some areas around our menstruation is from suppression of this knowledge historically. Taking this knowledge away from women, burning women as witches if they had this knowledge, as a way to suppress this knowledge so that women would have more babies and thus we would have a bigger working population.
I have a lot of thoughts about this, Jen, and I talk about this in my program because I come from a communist country. And so it's really interesting when I was exploring the subject of, because I think you know my views on how I sit with the patriarchy and the men just want to shut down women and all of that. It's interesting that now you've brought up to the surface this, like, more people to labor. So it's actually not about, you know, men sitting at the top and telling women to work, because I've experienced this firsthand in a Soviet country where literally I grew up in a society. That's why I'm passing this on to, like, let's say the American women who did not have that mentality necessarily, where in the Soviet Union, everybody was a comrade. It didn't matter whether you had a vagina or breasts. One last question I have, and before we go to the last question, because I work a lot with helping women revamp their beliefs about men, part of my work is also helping women get out of the mentality that it was, you know, it's easy to, when I say men invented forceps, the prevalent idea that I hear, it's like, oh, yeah. So men wanted to get into the medical industry, take this away from women and blah, 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 you know. And my view on all of this, I've actually read about this. And because I work with, okay, how can we change that? Or what's actually the case? You know, like I've read about this and I'm obviously very happy to have a discussion about this. But, you know, knowing how the masculine mind works, it's like the men saw the women or are seeing the women in so much pain. Here's another perspective, what I'm saying to this. You know, when men look at women in labor, for them, this is something to fix because it's very painful from the outside. And the men were like, with good intentions, I believe, said, all right, how can I alleviate this woman's pain? And being a scientist and maybe, I don't know, working with tools or whatever, hey, I can fix this for you. No need to suffer anymore. Of course, without the basic understanding of how the female body actually works in labor and how it is a natural process. So just another perspective there.
And I think it's a very valid perspective. It's the magic of our body, and it makes our body something that is a problem to be solved. And this denies all of us, men and women alike, the richnesses, because embodiment isn't just for women. It absolutely has a role with and for men, non-binary folk.
Right. So the last question here to answer, Jenna, is the future is embodied, right? And I know, again, you're going to have a whole conference about this, but what I'm curious to hear your answer, and then we're going to finish there, is, like, for example, and I know, you know, when we talk about capitalism and technology and how everything just went up and into the mind and, you know, it's all about production, you know, and success and results and all of that. Like, I still see the benefits in all of that, like Google, let's say, you know, how can you have your own? So for me, I'm interested in a future that combines, obviously, us being embodied and knowing who we are and feeling and not and putting that perhaps even as a priority, but at the same time, still having all the technological and industrial revolutions and taking advantage of Google. So in essence, it's like, and I can give you my example real quick. So I just came from the 3-day retreat where there was no technology, no Wi-Fi. And I came out of it and it was like meditation every day and yoga twice a week, amazing nature and a lake. So I came out and I turned my phone and there was tons of notifications there. And I was like, oh, fuck. Like, I don't want to be like, what is this? You know? So what I did on the way back, I deleted Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger and my email from my phone. And today was the first day. I'm actually thinking of doing like a 30-day experiment. And I've just had the most amazing, productive, I would say even an embodied day, because I tuned more into, how do I feel? Mm-hmm. What do I, think? And what do I want to do? You know, so perhaps this is kind of the answer to that. But I'm curious, how do you see the future that is embodied? And perhaps, and I don't know, maybe you don't think we have to have Google, but yeah, just tell me about that.
I'm all for Google. I'm all for Google. I'm all for the luxuries and ease of life. I don't want to give up my dishwasher. Like, oh my gosh, imagine, you know, life would be so much harder if I didn't have some of the luxuries that I'm privileged to have. But on the flip side of this, Anna, is that our current occupation of this planet is unsustainable. It is heating up to a point whereby irrevocably our children are going to have a very different interaction with nature than we did. And in a few generations, if we don't actually change the course, our life on this planet will look hugely different. We may not recognize where we're living. So I love my dishwasher and I love Google, but I also want our children to have a future. And I think this means we do have to make greater course corrections. The only way that we are able to know what course corrections need to be made is by, I believe, the personal skill of coming home to ourselves That's step number one. That's the skill of embodiment that you teach, that I teach, and that we're both so passionate about. Because as we come home to ourselves, we are able to make better decisions, to spend our time differently, to decide if we're going to actually turn off all of those notifications on our phone, which is capitalism saying you have to always be on and always be productive and always consuming more resources and making more money. That's what capitalism wants us to do. And capitalism is one of the reasons that our planet is really going to shit. Like it's a scientific fact. So I say, yes, let's keep Google. Let's keep our dishwashers. Let's keep our phones and decide when we want notifications. But let's do that in balance with honoring what we're here to do on the planet, which is to actually be experiencing life, the richness of life, to actualize who we are here to be, not the prescription of who we have been told we should be. And that requires us to recenter the personal skills of embodiment so that we can be kind of small-time, humble activists in the way that we actually show up to live. That's how I feel that, you know, everyday kind of women like you and I actually, you know, I'm not destined to be a politician or to, you know, save the ocean single-handedly, but I can make small changes where I live. And that's actually my responsibility as a good human of the planet.
Right. And then the beauty of everything we're talking about, because I know this can be, this is a big subject. And a lot of the times, what can I do? But as you said, like even the practice, like I'm already doing this, Jenna, in obviously in my life and in the women that we work with, it takes one embodied woman at a time that gets on her mat, gets on your hands and knees and starts moving and feeling. And so through these practices that you and I teach and a lot of other women who you're teaching to teach and to pass on, it all starts with us, which I have always been a proponent of. You know, if you want to change something big, like all of these big subjects, it has to start with you, because from that, you know, all the ripple effects go forward. All right. Well, we're going to finish off here, Jenna. Super looking forward to your conference. Is this something that you wanted to tell us at the end of this interview if women want to connect?
Yeah. If you're interested in more of these types of discussions, looking at the many intersections between how we got to be here, but also how do we actually create a really sensuous and joyous way forward, because that's an important part of the conversation. It's not all doom and gloom. Then you're very welcome to join our conference. It's free. It's over 3 weeks in June.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Anna.
All right, girlfriends, hope you enjoyed listening or watching to this episode. And if you did, and if you resonate with most of the things I'm saying and you want to learn more and you want to finally start attracting masculine men, I have an invitation for you. So as you know, I am committed and passionate about helping successful women attract and keep committed masculine men. So I have a personal invitation for you. If you're resonating with everything and you're ready to step up and invest in yourself and take things to the next level, I would love, love, love to talk to you and see if you would be a fit for my work and what I do. And so basically what I'm doing is I'm inviting you, and it's a personal invitation only if you resonate, because I don't work with everyone and I'm not here to just, you know, make a quick buck and whatever. I'm here committed to your result, and I will make sure that we go until the end and that we get you the result that you want, which is start attracting better men. So I invite you to sign up to actually apply for a free discovery call with me. It's a call that is 1 hour long, and what we do is we talk about your current situation, where you are today, and what's wrong, quote unquote wrong, with your dynamics with men, what you don't like, and then we're going to talk about what you really want and where you want to get. And at the end, if I find that that's a good fit, I'll tell you what I do and I'll offer you to join us and how we could work together. So just to give you a bit of context, this experience is all about, and what I'm going to offer to only if I find that that's a good fit, is about, number one, putting yourself in the best position to start attracting committed masculine men, and not through tactics and techniques or tips, tricks, whatever, but just by being you and understanding and appreciating men, thus creating a deeper relationship with yourself as a feminine essence woman and attract better committed masculine men. Number two, it's all about letting go of overworking perfectionism and the need to control by overcoming your limiting beliefs, patterns and obstacles to rediscover your worth and enoughness and rebuilding your faith in your own voice and your own decisions and exploring your boundaries and so on and so on. Number three, it's all about letting your body lead. Stop overthinking and start trusting your gut and your heart when it comes to making decisions, expanding and embracing your range of emotions, cultivating sense of awareness and pleasure and feeling more without apologizing for it. And I know if you're here, you understand and you know that the path to your masculine man, who's a conscious, healthy man, is through you. It's through embracing your feminine nature. It's through running with the wolves and embracing your wild feminine side and actually gaining power from it. And a healthy masculine man will only be attracted to that if you get to that place yourself. And last but not least, it's all about becoming deeply connected to yourself as a woman. Understand what true femininity is, exploring deeper levels of intimacy, and finally becoming free, lighter, and open. Embracing basically the feminine side of polarity, because again, this is what your masculine man wants. And it's all about stop living in the masculine energy by pushing, doing, and choosing all the time and start living, enjoy freedom and your wild nature where you can surrender, where you can finally let go. Trust me, this is an amazing place to be and it's easy and joyful and it feels natural and feels like a woman. So if you resonate, go to girlskill.com/apply and there's going to be a short survey, step one, just apply there. And then the next step is to schedule a call with me. It's going to be an hour. We have fun on this call, so I hope to see you there. And my calendar is booked for another, my calendar is open for another week. So go ahead and do that. If you don't see times that are available for you, make sure you email me because I'll always make time for you to make sure that you get your spot. All right, girlfriend, keep running with wolves and I'll see you next week. Okay, bye.